This is the Division 2, Division 3 podcast.
Welcome to the Inside the Cross Division 2, Division 3 podcast. I am IL Editor-in-Chief Matt Kinnear. We have a very special show for you today. Kyle Devitt and Josh Davey kick things off with the analysis portion of the show, talking about the Lemoyne-Merrimack tilt, a wild finish there up in North Andover, Massachusetts last weekend, as well as a host of other D2 and D3 games. I close the podcast with an interview with Scott Hackett-DeGleish, the head coach of RPI, talking about their strong start to the 2019 season. Please subscribe to the Inside the Cross podcast on iTunes, rate this, and support Division 3 Lacrosse. Thanks and enjoy.
Welcome back to the Inside the Cross Division 2, Division 3 podcast. I'm your co-host, Kyle Devitt. Matt Kinnear couldn't join us today, but we got Josh Davey, who is all the way back from his New Orleans sojourn. Josh, what's going on, man?
Not much, man. Beautiful day here in Baltimore. Fired up to dive into some midweek action. We're hitting. It's the best time of year right now. You got D3 playing Saturday, Wednesday, Saturday. There's nothing more you can ask for. So I'm excited to dive into some of these games and recap a pretty interesting weekend, and then look forward and excited to look even farther. I think we can really start to see the trajectory for some of these teams that we talk about on a regular basis on this podcast. So I'm looking forward to diving in. Let's do it, my man.
Yeah, let's get right into it, and we're gonna start kind of in my wheelhouse, which is Division II. This past Saturday, I went to Merrimack College to witness their remarkable, exciting, amazing comeback against conference foe Lemoyne. Of course, Merrimack won 12-11. I can't say enough like great things about the experience of this game, because I go to a lot of places up here in the north, and I visit a lot of schools. And I don't think any of them, you know, no shots, but I don't think any of them are as accommodating as Merrimack are. You know, their field is actually beautiful. It's fairly new, and this is a school that's going to go D1 in the coming years. It's a school that is easy for me to get to, which, by the way, it's hard, okay? It takes me an hour to, like, go to the movies. You know what I mean? Like, we're living in the sticks up here. But Merrimack, great to get to, great atmosphere, great fans, for at least for this game. The stands were packed with Lemoyne and Merrimack fans, so it's very exciting. Lemoyne was winning for most of the game. I think Merrimack really only played, you know, two complete quarters of lacrosse, and those quarters happened to be the first quarter and the fourth quarter, but the entire middle of the game belonged to the Dolphins. I think that the one takeaway I have here is not that Merrimack is good. I think we already knew that. And not that Lemoyne is good. I think we already knew that. But Lemoyne has a legit, all-around, D2 Player of the Year candidate in Dan Entman. He is incredible. I could not believe. I looked at the stat sheet, and he seems like one of those guys that doesn't show up in the stat sheet, right? Like, he plays on the wing, he plays offense, he plays defense. You're like, oh, that's cute, that's nice. Like, you got a do-it-all guy, all right, sure. And then, the game's over, he's got 2 goals, 4 assists, 9 ground balls, and 2 cost turnovers. And he's a short stick. That is insane. That is an insane stat line. He played an amazing game. A lot of other players on the Lemoyne side had excellent outings. It was just kind of one of those destiny games. You know, like,
real quick, this was number 4 Lemoyne versus number 6 Merrimack. So this is a heavyweight tilt.
Yes, and Merrimack was only 6 because they lost to LIU Post in an incredible game last week. So right, this is a team now that's getting experience. Lemoyne's getting experience. I think that people thought Lemoyne, if they won this, would, along with Adelphi, be the favorite in the NE10. But, you know, Merrimack, you can. It's funny because I made a comment mid-game that the one thing that beats Merrimack's style of play is a really consistent kind of controlling style of play. And that was true to a point until, you know, Lemoyne stopped controlling things and Merrimack took back everything, started getting caused turnovers, had a little trouble with the faceoff X, but eventually just kept trapping, kept causing turnovers, kept getting possessions, kept getting shots up, and scoring early in the clock. And it just turned the entire game in the fourth quarter. You know, game-winning goal with 48 seconds left. I can't say enough about this contest. I know that, like, the D2 heads are like, oh, more D2, more D2. Here's your more D2. This was amazing. I'm so happy I went to this game. Couldn't have been happier to go anywhere else this past weekend. But one more D2 thing I want to talk about, another game. Indianapolis, 11. Lindenwood, 6. Now, Indianapolis is 7-1. And this morning, we were talking, doing a little editorial email back and forth with Matt Kinnear and Jeff Shannon. And they asked me, what do you think is the best D2 story right now? And I think it's Indianapolis. So we're going to try and pursue that feature for the next issue of the magazine. Lindenwood's having a great season, too. It's 7-3. But Indianapolis just blew this one open, really. I mean, they got 3 goals and 1 assist from Parker Kump. Matthew Johnson, 2 goals, 1 assist for them. Vittorio Cancela, hopefully I'm saying that right, 2 goals for them as well. This is a team that maybe people haven't heard of, but I think could conceivably be a player when the playoffs start happening. And it's a team that we have to watch out for, give some dap to, and pay attention to moving down here as the season progresses.
I love it. I love it. Let's jump to D3 quickly here. There was a handful of games that we had our eyes on from the weekend prior. Let's start. I'll jump into two of the South games, and then, David, I'll let you hit on some of the North games.
Sounds good.
So the ones of note, the two I want to talk about are Gettysburg or Sinus, the first battle of the Centennial Conference, first week of Centennial Conference play up in the Mid-Atlantic area, and then York Cabrini, which was a Friday night tilt. Let's start with York Cabrini. Cabrini's a team we've talked about a lot. You know, I had seen them play against Lynchburg. They were just really impressive. Talking to a few coaches this week, they had said that Cabrini was maybe the best team they had played all year. Unfortunately, they had some guys who had banged up throughout the season. One of their best players, I don't think, has played a minute yet. They lost the Brooks kid to a collarbone, Timmy Brooks kid. I know the Krug kid, number 55 for them, who's their other like lefty attackman, really dynamic player, has been banged up. I think he played a little bit, but didn't really get in the stat sheet for this one. And it really wasn't that much of a game. I remember I was Friday night, I was watching some hoops, and I checked this out on my phone to see what the score was, and it was 10-2. So, the tail of the tape, faceoffs won, York 18-21. It's going to be tough to beat anyone, especially a top five team, if you're winning 3 faceoffs. So you combine the lack of success in the faceoff X with a few of the guys who are banged up. The final score was 11-7 York, but that really wasn't indicative of the pace of play. York really dominated this game from beginning to end. It didn't have as much success on man up. I mean, Cabrini did convert on a few of their main opportunities, which gave them a little momentum, a little chance like, hey, maybe they can come back and do this thing. But the Spartans held out. They played great. You know, their only loss still so far is to RIT. With CAC play coming up, I believe they play CNU in the next few weeks, which means they play Salisbury in the next few weeks. So we'll dive into conference play and what that means for some of these teams specifically a little later on. But York continues to roll, coming back from that RIT loss, the Mustang Classic. Cabrini reeling a little bit right now. I say that as they're sitting here at 7-1. Just from what I've heard, they're a little banged up. It's going to be interesting to see how they bounce back. Historically, they have rolled through conference play. I don't think they had lost a conference game in like 26 years. They know they switched conferences this year, so it could be a little bit of a change for them. But still a team I expect to win their conference tournament and make it. Hopefully they can get healthy before the end of the season.
Yeah, also the only game that I picked wrong in the last 2 weeks. 9-1, baby. Make some money
in the back, my friend.
Yeah, well, I'm not doing great in the D1 picks, so I gotta make my bones elsewhere.
Yeah, I saw they started actually showing what the records were. Matt Kinnear, he's not on here right now, but whew, come on, buddy.
Yeah, you gotta hover around 500. We gotta be professional.
I think he's about 7 games below 500 right now. So
yeah, I'm 1 game over. Feeling good.
Hey, man.
All right.
Keep on keeping on. The other game in the South I want to touch on is actually a really similar game in terms of how it was played. The layout was Gettysburg 13, Ursinus College 9. Ursinus is a team we had Coach Gary Mercadante on the podcast about 2 weeks ago, I believe. He had a great interview with Matt, story on InsideLacrosse.com. Check that out. They got to a hot start beating Cortland and Stevenson early. Like I said, first Centennial Conference game of the year. First weekend for these guys was at Gettysburg. Gettysburg's a team we have talked about that's been up and down. They took their licks against Salisbury. They have 3 losses, but none of them are that eye-opening. You know, we had heard some rumblings that it was sort of some locker room stuff, but this is a good win for them. Ursinus is a team that was hot, a team that was in our top 10. Gettysburg's kind of a fringe top 10 team. So similar to that York-Cabrini game, how, you know, the final score of this game was 13-9. Gettysburg led 10-2 at one point in the third quarter. Brian Colon was great for them. He had 2 goals. Blake Gray had 5 goals for the Bullets. Caden Neitlinger had 2. Jack Fletcher had 1. So it was a good all-around performance for them. It's not the normal names you usually see for Ursinus, so I think that's a good indication of how Gettysburg was able to kind of take away, you know, when you're playing the Lakers, you don't want to let LeBron beat you, right? So they're trying to take away their top players. You had goals from some guys who aren't as popular names. Bobby McClure had 3. Joe Mercurio had 1. But those normal names you're used to seeing for Ursinus weren't really there for them. So I thought that was interesting. You know, we've talked about Mitch Wyckoff being one of the best defensemen in the country for the Bullets. So, you know, good to see them, you know, get back on there. Peter DeSimone was the attackman from Ursinus, who had been having a great year, making a lot of highlights. He had one assist the entire game, 1 point. So good for Gettysburg to get back on track. Like I said, Centennial Conference really picks up now, so we're going to go Saturday, Wednesday, moving forward here. So Centennial Conference, I think, is the most interesting conference moving forward between Gettysburg, Ursinus, Dickinson, F&M, all top 20 teams, and then you still have the Haverfords, Washington Colleges, Swarthmores, who can come in and beat you anytime. So this was another interesting one. Really excited for Gettysburg, kind of get off the Chennai, get a big win for them moving forward. So let's transfer here a little bit up north. What games do you have an eye on this past weekend up north, Kyle?
Yeah, game we didn't have an eye on. Very surprising result. Williams, 16. Bates, 14. I'm going to say it's a huge upset until I bring up Williams' schedule. They've only lost to Wesleyan by 2. And if you remember listening back to this podcast, I kind of went, well, why are you only beating Williams by 2? Turns out, Williams is really good. They've beaten Trinity, Union, Connecticut College, RPI, and Bates. And they're playing MIT tomorrow.
They could be getting some actually, top 20 votes this week. They could be getting some top 20 votes.
They will get one from me, and they will beat MIT, but mostly that's grudge life because I don't like MIT because they're in the new Mac. So I think that looking through kind of how they've played out, they've got a freshman attackman from Wayland, Mass., Jake Hayes, who has 9 goals and 11 assists. And he's a midfielder, but they're kind of running a lot of stuff up top, down low. They've got a lot of production out of a sophomore attackman in Corey Lund, who has 16 goals and 5 assists. And they also have an excellent goaltender. You know, Harry Gayden had 12 saves here. He let in 14, and Bates is a team that will get on you. Bates is a team that feeds the cutter and pulls you out and tries to get you to play their style of game, and I think Williams here just took it to him, and I think Bates was probably surprised at that. And I think that now we can't be surprised when Williams does a great job, listen, these wins are amazing that they have. You know, RPI is no slouch. We're going to talk about them in a second, but I think we got to keep an eye on Williams in the NESCAC here.
And Bates is a team now with 2 losses, 1 to RIT and to Williams. 2 goals each in those losses, so a 4-goal swing, and they're undefeated right now. So this is definitely a great win for Williams. And the NESCAC just continue to be a gauntlet, man. Shout out to the North.
Yeah, and Matt Listala, one of Bates' leading scorers, held to 5 assists, but held off the score sheet in this one, too. So Williams has some defenders there.
I think also it's a reflection of, you know, not to cut you off, is, you know, there's a lot of film on these teams now. You're able to really get a really good idea of some of these schemes, what teams are trying to do, where they're trying to attack from. You know, sitting here, it's almost April 1st, you know, you're really able to get a really good picture of what teams are trying to do. And coaching, I think, you know, that always matters. But I think it comes to light even more now is how you're actually preparing for teams on a week-to-week basis.
Right, and one more thing, we'll stop in the North one more time before we move on. RPI, 13, Ithaca, 11. This is one we had in our picks. I picked RPI. I think RPI, now we know RPI's only loss is to Williams. They are 7-1. Owen Putman showing up in this game for the Engineers. I believe they're the Engineers, right? Troy, New York. I'm getting that right. Yeah. Owen Putman, 5 goals, 1 assist here. Phenomenal performance by their goalie, Brian Doty, 15 saves. I think Ithaca is one of those teams that we put kind of up there because of their past success in the last, like, 5 years or so. They moved conferences, and I think that it's one of those teams where these New York D3 teams are interesting because I feel like there is a lot of turnaround in how successful each one is at the top of their conference and the top of their play. And by that, I mean not that they are losing prestige or anything like that or less talented. It's like they trade places at the top of the heap, at the top of the mountain, and they're all just hanging on, waiting for their turn to get to the top. And I think that, you know, Ithaca at 4-2, they've got some decent wins. You know, they beat Skidmore, Oneonta, Geneseo, Lycoming, and they lost to Cabrini, Oswego, and RPI now. So we're looking at a team that is 4-3. I don't know why we have them marked at 4-2 on our site. We got to fix that. Patrick McEwen, it's on you, bud. but I think you know, they had a couple guys, Dan Lee and Ryan Osvath, dropping 4 goals each in this one. They might be one of those teams that kind of leans heavily on a couple guys. And RPI, you know, I think that going forward, a lot of people were surprised I picked them over Ithaca. I wasn't, just because I went back through and looked at a couple of their other results. And I think they might be one of those teams to watch out for come tournament time.
I love it. One other matchup I just want to mention from this past weekend is a top 25 matchup, a little north-south heater. Stevens 14, Stevens Tech from Hoboken 14, CNU 9. CNU is still a team, can't really figure out. I think they might be popping out of my top 20 this week. Don't really have any marquee wins. You know, they had the big win over Roanoke that isn't that great of a win anymore, other than based on how much they had beat them by earlier. Stevens, ironically, lost to Roanoke a few weeks ago, but continues to get some top 25 wins. So I thought that was another one, at least worth mentioning. CNU will play York this weekend as well, so expect them to catch another loss. Let's jump. We're recording this on Tuesday. It's going to come out Wednesday, so you're going to be listening to this Wednesday. So Wednesday night games, there's 2 on the D3 calendar I want to just mention briefly. And then, Kyle, I know there's a D2 game this week that I want you to elaborate on as well. So of note, Salisbury-Cabrini, Wednesday night, March 27th. We've talked about Cabrini. They're banged up. They're hurting. Salisbury, opposite. They're just sort of rolling at this point. As we get into that CAC play, well, they'll end up playing the CNUs and Yorks of the world. I think Salisbury takes this one. Cabrini, coming off, you know, they took that licking on Friday night from York. Hopefully they can get some healthy guys back into the roster, into the rotation here, but I think Salisbury continues to take this one. And then we mentioned the Centennial Conference continuing to roll. Wednesday night tilt, Gettysburg, F&M. This is a huge one. These are maybe the two best teams outside of Dickinson, obviously, and Undersinus that we talked about in the Centennial. Really even matched on paper. Like, they don't really no team really dominates in one aspect of the field. You know, when you think of offense, defense, and sort of, you know, special teams, what you want to call them, goalies, face-off guys, they're all sort of at 50%. Goalies are playing fine. You know, when you look at best player to best player, I think Mitch Wyckoff on the defensive end for Gettysburg, Kevin Mollahan is their best player on offense for F&M. So it's really going to come down to those other guys, those role players for these teams. I'm really interested in this one. This is one I'm definitely on the live stream rocking and rolling for. I think it's going to be a really, really good game. Wouldn't be surprised if we saw some overtime. And this is the best part about D3, man. Wednesday night, watching an amazing game that has serious NCAA playoff implications. That's all you could ask for in a game. So I know D2, Kyle, you got your eyes on a game circle in the D2 life as well.
Yeah, I definitely want to say Gettysburg, F&M, you know, keep an eye on Kevin Mollahan for F&M. In the Mustang Classic, he was kind of shut out of the first game, and in the second game he roared back with a vengeance. So that's a guy I definitely want to watch and see kind of how he develops into, you know, he is their best player, I believe. So I want to see how he develops against a top-tier defender like Wyckoff. So I think that's definitely the matchup, by the way, to watch 100%.
And that could be the best defensive player and the best offensive player in the Centennial going head-to-head. I would argue that is what's going to happen on Wednesday night.
Absolutely. But let's go to D2. The game I want to look at first, you know, it's interesting. We're talking about midweek games here, and it's a little hard to do that with the podcast. But the great thing about D2 and D3 is that midweek games, you know, D1 has Tuesdays are for the hunter. But D1 coaches have a lot more control over their schedule, I think, than D2 or D3 coaches. And because of conference play, you are mandated to play more midweek games at this point of the season. We're really ramping up. Like, there were a couple weeks here where you could get away with playing one game a week. No one's playing one game a week anymore. You know, we're going up to two, sometimes three games a week as the season advances into April. And one of these games I want to talk about is Adelphi versus Pace. It's an incredible matchup. Adelphi is 8-0. Pace is 6-0. Powers in the NE10. I think we're going to see here, I think what everyone wants to see is Pace for real. Is Pace for real as a team? You know, they've dropped some huge goals. You know, they dropped 23 goals in their first game, and I think everyone went, whoa, okay, nice. That's nice to see. They got a lot of senior leadership. Daniel Keenan is their leading scorer, 19 goals, 8 assists. Bradley Pedersen, also an attackman, also a senior, 12 goals, 11 assists. These are numbers for Pace that I think people maybe aren't used to seeing, but you know, I actually know Pace's head coach fairly well because he's also an MLL coach, Tom Mariano. And I know by watching his MLL teams that this team is going to be well-disciplined and ready for this matchup with Adelphi. I think the concern you're looking at with Adelphi is they're basically running a buzzsaw. You know, the only team that kind of came close to beating them so far is LIU Post. And, you know, they pushed them to the limit. They, you know, Adelphi only won by one goal there. But, you know, you've got some seniors here. Ian Kirby's their leading scorer. 24 goals, 18 assists, 42 points. Pretty incredible numbers there. They've got some excellent goalkeepers. Brendan McDougal is saving 52%. And the backups are 76 and 100%. So, a lot of fun there. Fun team to watch. Coach Purdy always has his guys ready to play. They are kind of flirting with the number one spot, too, in the top 20 rankings. And this game might put them right over the top, or it could drop them a lot, like we saw with Merrimack a couple weeks ago. But that's definitely one game I want to highlight. That's happening Wednesday. And I think we're really just waiting for the weekend. The midweek matchups are so tasty, it's almost tough to jump to the weekend, right? Is there anything that's kind of catching your eye here? Is there anything catching your eye here for Division III for the weekend?
Yeah,
I think it's a tough pick.
Yeah, I mean, this will be my ODAC bias. Roanoke WNL is sort of the first marquee. Actually, that's not true. WNL playing Hamden City last week. Roanoke WNL, two of the sort of blue bloods from the ODAC going at it this weekend. You know, it's funny on our Google Doc here, you know, we sort of have like a loser leaves town match for this Roanoke WNL game. I think WNL wins. Roanoke still too many pieces missing on the defensive end. But what's cool and the broader picture of this game, we don't need to get too much into the details. AJ Witherell is back, which is significant. He's played dating all the way back, I think, to maybe like the Gettysburg game. So he's back in motion, full swing, arguably the best player in Division III lacrosse. But what I want to talk about is, you know, conference play and how important the two halves of the season are, right? Like the first half of the season where you're probably playing a lot of these top teams are playing a lot of other top teams, and then there's a little bit of lull in the conference play. You probably have one or two other heavy hitters in your conference, and then you have your conference tournament. So if you don't win a handful of these early season heavy hitter games, and then you lose to those, you know, a couple of those teams in your conference, and you don't get the AQ, your season's over real quick. I mean, it happened to F&M last year. They didn't win enough of those games early, didn't win the AQ for the Centennial, and they were a really good team that got left out of the tournament. So I'm looking at this game right now. I think the only way Roanoke gets into the NCAA tournament is by winning the ODAC Championship. That's the only way they do it at this point. But WNL is a really interesting one. They're sitting here at 6-4, losses to York, Denison, F&M, Gettysburg, wins Christopher Newport, you know, okay, a pretty good win. Washington College, Mary Washington, Randolph-Macon, Bridgewater, not you know, jaw-dropping by any means. And then Hamden City this past week, they beat by 11, which is a good win. That's probably the fourth best ODAC team in the conference. So I'm sitting here and I'm thinking, all right, if they beat Roanoke, they run the schedule. Say they even beat Lynchburg the first, you know, they play each other on April 20th. But they lose the AQ. They don't win the conference tournament. Does a team like that, does that resume get in? And that's what's so cool about this time of year is you can really start to see where these games and you can sort of match resume to resume and say, all right, if they don't win this one, they don't lose this one. I know coaches aren't going to think like this. They're going to take it one game at a time. But as a fan, And as someone in the media, we can really start to like see the trajectory for some of these programs. And that's why a game like this where, you know, I think WNO will win for sure. But if Roanoke can get one of these, they can beat a Lynchburg, they can get a little momentum. Like, this is where it really gets dicey. And, you know, you learn a lot from those early season games. The wins and losses are what they are at this point. But you really need to focus on winning that ODAC championship, winning that conference tournament to solidify your destiny. So this is a really fun time of year. And as a D3 player, when you're playing Saturday and Wednesday, there's nothing better. So Roanoke WNO is the one that I got my eyes on this weekend. Has a lot of implications for the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, I think, you know, the one thing you said there, I think the loss that sticks out, if you're talking about WNO getting an at-large bid, is the Denison loss, and that is entirely dependent on Denison's rest of the season.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Totally. So I think that is something that it's funny how one result can really kind of handicap you in the eyes of, you know, the people that make the selections in the NCAA selection committee. So that's the one I would point to. I think they need an equal win, and the equal win to offset that. Actually, you mentioned it. I think it would be Lynchburg at this point. So I think if WNO, you know, runs the rest of the table, they're in a good place. But I think you have to look at the resume of some of the teams that they lost to along the way. Definitely very interesting, and they're going to have to, you know, buckle down and put together a long streak here.
Real quick, just because, you know, you're never thinking you're going to be rooting for your, you know, in-conference foe, but, like, WNO would be in such a better position right now if Roanoke were undefeated, right? If Roanoke hadn't lost the game yet, it's hard to root for those guys, but, like, they need Roanoke's strength of schedule. They need those guys. They need their conference foes to be undefeated or having a great, you know, resume going into that conference play to make those wins look that much better. And that's what's exciting about this time is you can get to start to look at those matchups and how teams sort of, you know, match up.
Yeah, one game we might think would be fun this weekend, not really a tournament level kind of contest here, is the Battle of the Wesleyans, and not that Wesleyan, Ohio Wesleyan versus Illinois Wesleyan. And maybe if you're listening to this and you're not super deep into D3 lore, you're not really sure why we care about this game, but Illinois Wesleyan is kind of why I care about this game. They play insane. They are an insane team, and they've been playing at this high clip even before the shot clock. They were just getting ready for it, up and down, up and down. They live by the sword. They die by the sword. I kind of want to see if I can get a stream of this because I haven't really watched them this season, but caught a couple of their games in their tournament last year in their lead up to making an NCAA appearance. So I'm pretty excited to watch Illinois Wesleyan.
Yeah, Ohio Wesleyan's a team that's had a really odd year. Not really played as well as we would have thought they were. And Illinois Wesleyan's a fringe top 20 team. They've been playing really well. They're putting up, you know, 20 plus goals multiple times. Our only loss so far coming to Salisbury. They took a beating there, but you know, they play Aurora Wednesday evening as well, which is a good program. So yeah, I mean, it's cool. These are the kind of the stories we want, you know, we want to highlight, or the Illinois Wesleyan who's putting up, you know, they're averaging 20 some goals a game. Those are the fun games, right? You talk about that Amherst RIT game and how much fun that is. These guys are doing that every week. So always good to highlight a program that might not get as much love as they normally would, or maybe they deserve.
And speaking of which, the D2 matchup this weekend, kind of a mixed bag, I would say. But the one I'm looking forward to the most is Belmont Abbey versus Mount Olive. We mentioned a couple weeks ago, Belmont Abbey had that stumble where they lost to Queens. They only scored 8 goals in that game. Queens beat them up. And since then, they've rattled off a win against Indianapolis, Lynn, and Florida Southern, all of which are, if not in the top 20, definitely flirting with it at the bar. So you want to watch what Belmont Abbey's going to do here. Mount Olive, also only one loss, you know, 8-1. It's a team that I think we might have written off early because, again, they also lost to Queens very early, and I think they've kind of crept up. They've put together 6 wins in a row. I think this is a huge matchup. Maybe people aren't looking forward to this as much as I am, but I'm really looking forward to seeing what, you know, guys like Noah Haas, the freshman phenom at Belmont Abbey, can do against the Mount Olive defense. And also, you know, Thatcher Clark is a senior leading scorer for Mount Olive, 24 goals, 3 assists, so he's a gunner. You got to see if you can shut him down. Definitely the game to watch for this weekend in Division II.
Dude, we're 2 months away from Memorial Day. We're literally almost to date, 8 weeks away to the date from Memorial Day. I mean, we're We're in the home stretch. We always talked about, you know, in college, you want to dominate April. This is the time of year you got to be playing your best. You got to be bringing it every day, especially in D2 or D3 where you're playing Saturday and Wednesday. It's the best time of year. We are 2 months away. That is crazy to think about, that we will be at Lincoln Financial Stadium, home of the Birds, 2 months from today.
Yeah, when you say it like that, I think back to what it was like when I was a coach, and I was like, oh my God, it's not even April yet. Like, that's the same. I don't have that same feeling because I actually like this a lot more than I did getting pounded as a coach for, you know, 6 years. But you're absolutely right. These teams are actually just coming into their own now. I think we're going to see a lot of strange results. We've already had some strange results with the shot clock here. I think it's only going to get better as we move down the stretch. I want to thank everybody for joining us today. Josh Davey coming in. You know, we're just kind of taking control of this pod now. It's ours now. Matt McInerney's going to have to come back and take it from us, which I'm sure he will next week at some point. But thanks for tuning in, and we'll catch you next week.
Here on the Inside Lacrosse Division II, Division III podcast, we have a special guest, RPI head coach Scott Hackett-Daglish. Coach, I think I pronounced the name right, so that's a good start right there. But how are you feeling right now?
Indeed, yeah, it's a tough last name, but you nailed it. Feeling great. We obviously most recently had a tough loss. This past Wednesday to a great Williams team. They turn around and knock off Bates. And certainly want to give them their credit. But didn't feel like we played to our full potential. But then to see our guys rebound and get a big conference win, an important one on the road at Ithaca. Was certainly what you want to see from your team and how they responded to that adversity and coming off that tough loss.
We'll start right there with this Ithaca game, a 13-11 win. Can you walk me through, what you guys did in those few days, after the loss and then preparing for a really top tier opponent in Ithaca and then coming out the win? How did that all shake out for you?
Yeah, it's a great question, and always always interesting as a coach how you handle it. But we really believe in our process, and we basically went right back to the same process and just looked to refine it. There were a couple things that were a little different. One, we had a big discussion on Thursday, really opened it up to the room, and asked the guys, hey, what are we seeing? What are we feeling? What happened on Wednesday? What do we need to do better? Really kind of, open forum, hashed it out, and then went out and had a short but tough practice, got it cleansed out of our system, if you will. And the guys were great. And then Thursday we took it really light. Felt like having our legs underneath of us was going to be really important. Playing Ithaca, two teams that, like to get up and down, ride hard, both aggressive teams, and us and them. So we basically kind of did a walkthrough on Friday, made sure we did a little rollout and stretch when we got to the hotel that night, and then woke up and got after it on Saturday.
Now that you're, about midway through this season here, definitely into the part where you're all about conference play, if you can just reflect back a little bit, and since you took over for this program, what are the things that maybe you saw day in, day out, whether it was in August, September, this January, or some parts of this year, those things that you saw that maybe told you, we have a team that can be pretty successful?
Yeah, for sure. I would say the first thing that really jumped out to me, you talk about reflecting back and thinking all the way back to August, and I didn't know much about anybody, hadn't really met the guys, and some of the freshmen started coming by during their orientation, and I started asking them, hey, how are things? Have you gotten to meet some of the upperclassmen? Oh yeah, coach, we've already been out there playing with them, doing some practices on our own. They've been great. You know, they're taking us to a lake, you know, up the road later today. You know, so I knew right from the start we had a really together group, that there wasn't any of that senior, you know, too good for freshmen, you know, kind of thing that you see on some teams. You know, number two, I would say, is the toughness and the grit. You know, that jumped out as soon as we started getting into practices. Guys just playing unbelievably tough, willing to, you know, sacrifice themselves for the better of the team. You know, and I think those two things have really carried us, you know, from the beginning and through the first half of the season. And we're certainly going to need to continue to rely on that togetherness and that grit and that toughness, you know, as we go through, you know, a challenging, you know, Liberty League. A lot of great teams out there, which we're excited about and feel fortunate to play in such a great league.
Yeah, if you can just talk a little bit about your league. I mean, this league, you just played Ithaca. You still got St. Lawrence. You got RIT. You got you guys, and you got a number of other good teams in this league. How do you stay focused kind of week in and week out? And, you know, just it's kind of a murderer's row of teams that you're going to have to go through. How do you just kind of keep steady and keep going forward?
Yeah, those teams have also got to go through us, you know, as well. But no doubt, to your point, I mean, again, we're fortunate to be in a great league with so many great programs and a lot of great history and a number of teams in the, you know, in the league ranked in the top 20, and things of that nature. You know, and the way that we go about that is that we approach every game the same. You know, I know it's a kind of a cliche coach thing to say, but it really is true. And in some regards, I think maybe we go to the extreme. You know, we obviously do a scouting report. We watch a little bit of film together, but it's pretty minimal. It's usually about, you know, 15 minutes, a couple clips of this, a couple clips of that. And then we just really focus on us, and getting better every day. We talk about stacking plus ones on top of each other, making sure that we're putting a plus one on the board every time we practice, every time we get together for a meeting, a film session, you know, a game, you know, whenever we're together. We want to make sure that we make it a positive experience and put a plus one on the board so that we keep getting better every time out. And that's really our main focus, and I think that's what keeps us grounded. The other thing I would point to is that we talk a lot about it. Everything's important and nothing special. All these games are important, the non-league, the league games. None of them are special. You know, we really try to take that focus approach and keep it on us, and try to keep ourselves grounded in that regard.
Very interesting. And another thing that I found interesting looking through your stats is, you know, your top three scorers, it's incredibly balanced between those three guys. JT Kelly with 37 points, Cooper Urban with 36 points, Owen Putman with 34 points. That's pretty just incredible, you know, that it's three guys with basically the same, you know, kind of stat line there. Is that a trademark of this team? Is just, you know, on any given day, it might be someone else who kind of contributes and has the big score line, but, you know, it's kind of more of a team approach and not just one guy that you guys rely on.
Yeah, 100%. You know, those guys have been doing a great job down there at attack for us, and you know, as you mentioned, very balanced scoring. And I think the sort of bigger story there, in some regards, is that you look at our midfield, and I mean, we've for a lot of the year we've been running four midfield lines. You know, you've got probably 9 or 10, you know, guys who have had you know, scored points out of the midfield, whether it's assists or goals or hockey assists that, you know, that don't show up on the stat sheet. And, you know, so they don't jump out to you because they don't have quite the points. But exactly to your, you know, your perspective, very much a team approach. And, you know, we don't have to rely on one guy. If that guy gets shut down on a particular day or has an off day, we've got plenty of guys that have his back. And, you know, that even goes beyond to, you know, guys that, you know, nobody's heard of that are practicing day in and day out and making us better. And that's a huge part of what we do. If we don't have guys pushing us constantly in practice, we're not going to get better. So absolutely a team and together approach, no question about it.
You mentioned this earlier, but, you know, running multiple midfield lines, when people watch you guys play, are they going to be seeing a team that likes to get up and down the field, likes to play a nice pace, likes to push the tempo? Is that what people might see when they watch RPI Lacrosse?
Yeah, I certainly hope so. You know, we refer to it and talk about it as organized chaos. You know, we like to ride hard. We like to get after you up and down the field. We're not afraid to pressure the ball. You know, we'll attack you in a lot of different ways throughout the course of the game. But certainly putting that ball on the ground and taking advantage of scramble situations, transition, you know, odd number, even low number, you know, we're not afraid to come at you. You know, but we've also, one of the things that I really like about us is that we've won games a lot of different ways. You know, we've won some games in the half field. We've won some games with our ride. We've won some games, you know, because of great face-off play and goalie play. And it just goes back to that same theme of team and being together and being able to rely on different pieces at different times. And it's something that has me really excited, you know, because I believe the great teams do that. They win. They find ways to win games in different ways, you know, beyond their core identity.
When I think of RPI, I think of, you know, high academics. I think of, you know, some really smart student athletes who are going to go on to do some great things. If you could just walk me through, and I know you have an Ivy League background as well, but just walk me through what it's like to coach, you know, these kids who are, you know, they're all smart. They're really got bright futures ahead of them. It must be kind of a treat in some ways to have these guys on your roster.
Yeah, I feel tremendously fortunate, you know, number one, to be at this institution and you know, academics are extremely important. And these guys work unbelievably hard in the classroom as well as on the field and in the community. You know, those are kind of our three main mission points. We want to have comprehensive excellence in those areas. But it is a lot of fun. And you know, part of our model here is empowering our players, you know, kind of having a player driven model in certain regards, and so opening the floor to them, and they've come up with a lot of great ideas, and we talk about, you know, simple and flexible systems that allow them to understand the base philosophy and then go be lacrosse players and be the athletes and the skilled players that they are. But you know, some of the best things that we've come up with and the best ideas has certainly come from them. They're a smart group and a really fun group to work with. They bring a great energy. I think that's another thing you talk about. You know, if you came and watched us play, what would you see? Our bench is just unbelievable. They're a whole nother part of our game. You know, it's awesome to see them so engaged and supporting their teammates, and you know, they have as much stake and as much to do with you know, our outcomes as the guys that, you know, get all the minutes and all the stats and the accolades, for sure.
For your background, you know, you came from Dartmouth, you know, you coached both offense and defense, you helped start a program at UMass Lowell, you've coached in Division I and Division III, really kind of a broad experience base where I feel like you've gotten the ability to kind of get multiple influences and experience many different things. How has that helped you in this head coaching role for RPI?
Yeah, it's been huge, and tremendously grateful for all the opportunities that I've had along the way, and you know, getting a chance to coach with and under Lars Tiffany when I was at Brown, and you know, stylistically picking up some things there. You know, picked up some great lessons in leadership working at Dartmouth. You know, getting to do this one time before, being a head coach at the Division III level. You know, I was much more prepared this second time around. You know, just experiencing all the ups and the downs and the different institutions. You know, again, just feel really grateful to have gotten all those experiences, having played for Dave Webster in college. And, you know, I a lot of times I have to stop and, you know, kind of pause sometimes. And I'm like, ah, oh, that's pretty funny. I never thought I would do that. You know, and it's something that, you know, whether it was Terry Mangan at Lafayette, that you know, taking something from there, you just hear words come out of your mouth. You're like, "Wow, I never would have thought that would have happened." But it's you know, it's again just really fortunate to have those experiences, and I feel like it's really helped a ton. You know, be prepared to try to maximize this group.
You know, those aren't bad guys to copy from if you're going to be a head coach. None of them. So that's a pretty good group to steal from if you need to.
Yeah.
if you could just give me, you know, what's the recruiting pitch? If you're talking to a student athlete, what makes RPI special? Why should someone come and you know, become a student athlete there, and the resources that RPI might provide a youngster who's interested in attending there for both lacrosse and for academics?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, so from that academic side, you know, obviously if you're looking engineering, you know, computer science, physics, you know, those are the obvious sort of, you know, sort of knowns, if you will, that are, you know, top-notch, you know, ranked very high in the country and you know, what this place was built on. You know, but one of the other things that I really love from an academic standpoint at RPI is that there's a ton of different majors. You know, we actually have a really great, you know, Lally School of Management, especially if you're looking the entrepreneurship route, that I think that sometimes when people look at it, you know, at face value, you know, that's not the first thing they think of when they think about RPI. You know, the second thing that, you know, I would mention from an overall standpoint is the people here. It's always been a really, really important factor to me when I look at an institution and you know, going to work with and for different people, you know, is what are the people like? Because the buildings are the buildings, and we're certainly fortunate to have great facilities, but the people are what make the experience. And there's a ton of great people here, you know, from our people in student life, our professors, you know, certainly a lot of the coaches and the administrators in the athletic department. You know, that's one of the major things besides kind of, again, the obvious that really drew me here. And I find people, you know, attracts others here. You know, from a lacrosse standpoint, you know, we've got some facilities that are, you know, better than some of the ones that I experienced at the Division I level, to be quite frank. We've got an unbelievable stadium. We've got a tremendous strength coach and strength facility. Justin Markley works with our guys religiously and does an awesome job. We've got a lot of support here on the athletic side and the academic side. And there's a championship culture history here. We've obviously had a lot of success, you know, but back in 1952, we won we were co-national champions, and albeit a very different time. You know, there's a storied history here, and excited to continue the path the way it's been going and certainly take it to new heights.
Coach, appreciate your time. Good luck with the Liberty League run coming up.
Yeah, Matt, thanks so much for having us on, and you know, very appreciative and love what you guys do out there for Division II and Division III lacrosse and covering the game and help grow the game. You know, we're really fortunate to have guys like you involved, and can't thank you enough.
This is the Division II, Division III podcast.